recording and let you start doing what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
There you go.
Okay. Well, welcome to the April 13th, 2021 session of Tangerine SDR and HAMSAI technical session. My name is Dave, KV0S. I have continued to work a little bit on programming of the board programmer. I do have it discovering my simulator will report two ports, a port A and a port B, and it will send back those ports to the inquiring programmer. So that works. I've also been working on sending files through with CRC32, so that's working through as well. So next on the list, we have Nathaniel W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Thank you very much, Dave. I have just been continuing work at the university teaching, working with students, trying to coordinate different research activities, arrange student support for the summer, things like that. It is coming along. So W2NF, back to Nat.
Fine business. Next on the list, we have Bill WB AW. E four EJ, sorry.
AB4EJ here.
Yes.
Good evening. I can't be on video at the moment because I'm driving. I was just at a Tuscaloosa Amateur Radio Club meeting, giving a talk about personal space weather station. First time we've had a meeting in a year. But anyway, my work on Tangerine has been minimal. But what I have started doing is starting looking into techniques of how to distribute and maintain the software. I would think what we need to do is we need to put together a Debian package because that way we can control that we put out the updates and that people can upgrade their system simply by using package maintenance that's built into Ubuntu. So I still have quite a bit of research to do on how to make that work. But that's about all I've been at so far in the last week. Now back to Nick.
Fine business, Bill, and thanks for that. Next on the list, we have David N1HAC. Go ahead, David. Well, David is unmuted, but I'm not hearing him.
Can you hear me? There we
Now
go.
we can.
Yeah, I don't know why this my computer doesn't always recognize the headset. Anyway. It's working now. I can see the
Yes.
little green bobbly thing. I was driving, got home, so I'm on it on the home computer. Continuing to work on our VLF propagation sounding rocket. Still on track, little bobbles, but on track for May launch, hopefully. And doing some development for ground reception as well. And I see Hyoman is on, who I talked recently about possibly using some of our instruments for projects he's working on. So I'm hoping that we can continue to work on getting stuff in various forms down to Antarctica. So back to Nat.
Well, fine business. Next on the list is Jim K4BSE. Go ahead, Jim.
Good evening. Well, I'm gonna have all the parts in to build my Grape One. Hopefully, I'll get started on that in the next day or two. I had one little project I need to get out of the way first. That was a GPS splitter, and I got that kind of working today. I'm lacking one or two items that should be in later this week, but then I'll be finished with that. So I'm hopefully starting that. Christina set me up to so that we can communicate with our help desk people. That got set up over the weekend, and I had a little chance to play with it. Then I think I kind of understand it, although as I start to put stuff on it, I'll probably have to reach out to her one or two more times. But should be able to publicize that's up and running very soon now. And that's about it.
Well, fine business. Next on the list, we have Dan in for XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Dave, and good evening, everyone. Well, I've had a couple of back and forths with Bill about how we're going to handle the software and documentation for the project. And I'm assuming we'll have something put together by next week. We'll see how it goes. I've been doing a lot of reading. I did a little bit of package management with the Mandrake group. That was about 15 years ago. Unfortunately, it was an RPM package system that they had, and not the APT, the Debian package. But anyway, that's about it from here. Talk to you everybody as the evening goes on.
Very good. And next on the list is Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. I've been working on this and that, playing mostly with Raspberry Pi Picos lately, but nothing, working with magnetometers, but nothing relevant to this group.
Okay. And next on the list, we have Don, KI5KGX. Go ahead, Don.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'll make it brief. You know, I recently attended the HAMSci 2021 conference, just signed in at that. I was absolutely intrigued with what you and the entire team was doing. And so I'm just here this evening to listen and learn as we go along. I'll let you carry on. I'll just introduce myself. I've been out of amateur radio for the last 50 years. It seems like life, work, marriage has kept me busy, but I'm certainly interested in participating and helping and learning, most importantly, as time goes on. So I'll let you carry on. And certainly, thank you, Dev, again, for your kind invitation to join this evening. So back to Ned.
Well, fine business. Welcome, Don. Hopefully you'll see some places where some of your skill sets fit in, or you might be able to want to learn something new. That's the whole point of this. Many of us have had a similar route. I went through a period of my academic career where I focused on that and lapsed in my ham radio license and then came back. So it's not an uncommon story. Anyway, next on the list, we have Gary, AF8A. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Been doing a little bit of work on the Grape Gen 1 documentation. John answered some questions I have. I need to fold that to the work I had done previously. And then, Jim, I hope to be able to send you a document for your review by close of business on Wednesday. And then maybe we can discuss it on Thursday morning. Back to that.
Fine business. And let's see. Next on the list is Greg. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks, Dave. I'm just going to echo Don's comments. I'm just reading the mail and trying to learn as much as I can. Back to that.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Hillman, KD2MCR. Go ahead, Hillman.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, it's been a while. I've been pretty busy with my classes and especially proposal writing, which is still going for the installation of magnetometers, especially in northern high latitude stations. Greenland, including Greenland and Svalbard, which is kind of cool. Other than that, yep, Dave McGaw was kind enough to stop by one of our NGIT engineers' lab located in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey, about Melville, by the way. So we talked about a possible deployment of, not possible, it was going to be happening, I think, remote power platform that will be installed in a deep polar cap in Antarctica this coming field season. And part of that, we have some discussion of possible deployment of GRAPE. Is that GRAPE, right? The one of the HF receiver that you guys are developing right now. So that's something that we have on the table right now. It'll be really nice to have it installed down there so that we can have some very unique data set there. The uniqueness of that is the fact that it's pretty deep into the polar region in Antarctica. So hopefully that we can make it happen down there. So that's all I have. Back to Ned. Thank you.
Fine business. And let's see. Next on the list is Jay, KB8 SBI. Go ahead, Jay.
Hi, gang. From WB8 SBI.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, that's okay. It's Monday. Nothing really new here. I did get the bill of materials list from the rest of the gang for the Grape One. Now I've just got to order the various parts. So that's next on my agenda to-do list here, among all the other things that I have to do, both for personal, professional, and amateur radio things. Otherwise, just playing a little FT8, and I noticed 20 meters FT8 has been staying open. The band has been staying open longer after sundown than it normally closes. So that's a welcome thing. Otherwise, not a whole heck of a lot from last week. Hope everybody is doing well and staying safe. Back to Ned.
Fine business. Okay, next on the list, we have Joe, W7LUX. Go ahead, Joe.
Good evening, Dave, and everybody on the group here. Been monitoring the GRAPE groups, and been very, very few postings on there. Got one post from Jim and haven't seen a whole lot more. Finally managed to solder down one of those little tiny electrostatic discharge chips, SO23. It's like a half by 1 millimeter, and they turn into jumping beans when you try to grab them with a pair of tweezers, which is kind of a problem. Been monitoring different frequencies. Finally got a good 24 hours on the 2.5 megahertz WWV transmitter, and been playing with Spectrum Lab. That has got to be one of the most user unfriendly programs I have ever encountered. The not only are the various settings hard to find, but then they change the darn program changes the things on me. I haven't figured that one out yet. Anyway, thanks, Dave.
Well, fine business, and thanks for your work. Next on the list, we have John, N8OBJ.
Yeah, it's been a busy week. Spent some time with Gareth and Peter at NJIT and got their great setup at the university and running. I also built 6 of the next generation Grape 2 front end boards, amplifiers. I got everything populated except the transistors. So I have to start slowly populating with the different transistors, checking their cue points, and then running them through the VNAs and looking for their operation, and then run them through the noise figure meter. Wrote a couple of documents. I've got a use for the station for when you want to shut the Grape down so you can use your ham station as a ham station again. If you're using the antenna, so I have a way to a sequence to shut the Grape down, use your ham station, then turn it back on again. So that's all documented. I'm also up to step number 42 of setting up the OS image from downloading it. I'm basically at the point now where I've got the VNC session established to the thing, and I'm in the process of doing the final setup for that. When I'm done with that, I'll ship that off to Joe, and actually Dave Schwartz in Fort Collins has also offered to take a look at it, since Joe's going to be busy with his better half later the part of this week. I built boards. Let's see. Also had an interesting run in. I had my first kidney stone this week. That was much fun, and got my second COVID shot on Friday and spent Saturday most of the day sleeping. So back to net.
Well, it sounds like a well-deserved sleep. Yes. Next on the list, we have Jonathan, KC3EEY. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, everybody. I've been knee-deep in my LaTeX project, I have been, I have finally made a very basic, crude, and awful looking template that compiles into something that looks like something, but it has everything that I want, or at least a basic structure. Other than that, I haven't really been, haven't had time to work on it, anything technical. But as a quick reminder for any of the newer people, if you are interested in VLF or VLFRX tools or my VLF module board, or if you just need help with something VLF related, shoot me an email and I will try to help you out. Back to the net.
Fine business, Jonathan. And I noticed that Dev KC3PVE jumped in there. So go ahead, Dev.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. So I am the sender of the invitation. Thank you for acknowledging my invitation and coming to the meeting this evening. We are very hale and hearty here in Scranton, doing well with our research endeavors, teaching classes, running busy, getting exhausted, but keeping very alive and kicking. Thank you so much.
Very good. So next on the list is Khan, KEAQWB, and he looks like he's outside.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, I'm right now I'm in Cocotino National Forest right outside Flagstaff. I'm going to settle in here for a couple days. I just got here this morning, so tonight I'm going to relax a bit. And then tomorrow I'm going to start breaking into the my radio stuff and start playing with it. Hopefully I can start to follow Christina's, collecting the Doppler shift data that she posted on hamside.org. So, and we'll probably travel around Arizona, Utah for the next couple of weeks. So, do some more stuff. So I'll keep you guys updated. Back to net.
Should be a nice time of year there.
Oh, it's beautiful. I love it. It's not hot. It's not too cold.
Yes. Dan can tell you all about Flagstaff.
Oh, he's from around here?
He lived in Flagstaff for a while.
Oh, okay. No, it's nice. It's a beautiful area. I love it.
Okay. Next on the list, we have John, KJ6IBP. Go ahead, John.
Hi, everyone. For the time being, I'm just attending the meetings and hopefully I'm learning something. And maybe eventually I'll be able to contribute a little bit more than just being an equipment operator.
Well, thank you for being here. And we appreciate your attendance. Okay, next on the list, we have Michael, AA8K. Go ahead, Michael. Fine business. And next on the list is Scotty, W82DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, just fine.
Okay. Well, very good. Thanks, Dave. And this week been a little bit slow, but we've actually continuing on the data engine layout and got some modifications made to make it easier to lay out for our squeaky CAD guy who doesn't like all these balanced traces, these differential traces. But and also we found out a little belatedly that the clock module, I hadn't realized this, the clock module is an 031 thick board, not an 062 board, because the connector it plugs into is designed for an 031 board. Clock module or NGFF connectors are made for thin boards. If you ever noticed your SD cards, solid state disk drives, your SSDs, they're all on 031 boards. They're not on 062 boards. So that was a little bit of a shock, since we have matched impedances on that board. It changing the thickness of the board changes the stack up, which changes a bunch of stuff. So Dave had to go back in there and reroute some of the stuff. We're down to 3 mil traces now to make the impedance come out right. So, but good news is 3 mil is not that killer compared to like what it might have to be on the data engine, because the only part I can find, well, up at, I think I just found a part while we were talking here, but there, we need a level translator for the micro SD card, and all the level translators that I can find are designed for cell phones. And so they're these microscopic, I mean, they're literally 2 millimeters by 2 millimeters square, and they got 20 balls on the bottom for a ball grid array type of thing. And Dave is telling me at 4.4 millimeter pitch, that's the junctions are 0.4 millimeters apart. He says, we either have to go 2 and 2 mil. And he said, the problem is that if you go two mil trace and 2 mil space, that's the spec for the entire board. He says, you're going to double the cost of your board by doing that. Yeah, one chip will double the cost of your board by having just the traces around those 6 pins. So he says, find me another part. We can't use this part. So I've been trying to find them, but all of them are, they're different pinouts, they're different layouts, but they're all still 0.4 millimeter pitch. However, I just found one that is a QFN style, still 0.4 millimeter pitch, but it's not a grid. It's all around the outside, which will actually work for Dave. So I think we may have a solution to that problem. We actually have the space on the board for a bigger part, but we can't route to the inner balls on the BGA without going to super fine traces, which of course cell phones have, but we don't want to pay for. So, and he says, well, yeah, we'll just shrink the board down. We can make it 2/3 the size. And I'm kind of like, no. Yeah, and make the PC board cost $100, you know, just for the blank. So no, we're not going to do that. So I've been trying to address that. And aside from that, we're working on the purchasing of parts for the prototypes right now. We got that process started. So Nona and I was working on combining the 3 boards, the receive module, RX module, the clock module, and the data engine. Since the BOMs are not likely to change much, if at all, at this point, the routing may change, connector placement may change, but the parts are not going to. So we're going to basically just buy the parts. And if we end up with a few extras that we didn't get, fine. But I'm getting a little worried now because parts are going obsolete. Parts are becoming hard to get. And I don't want to have to wait till October on, I don't know if Jonathan told you, but I think it was maybe David found out that the part for the VLF receiver is now, they're not available anymore until October. Well, I'm a little more optimistic because when the parts go unavailable, they usually put the manufacturer puts some huge long date on it to discourage you. But in reality, it probably won't be until October, but it probably won't be May either. So anyway, so we're starting the buying process probably in the next week to between 1 and 2 weeks. We will purchase all the parts. We'll order them anyway. And then we'll have a good idea of when they're actually going to come in, and we'll go from there. So that's where we're at. Back to you, Dave.
Very good. And next on the list is Tom, N5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, everybody. Let's see. I finished up the update and approved a pull request for GNU Radio to make it Mac compatible. And there is now a Mac version of the out-of-tree module for OpenHP SDR. And I started porting it to GNU Radio 3.9 and ran into some roadblocks, which I cleared last night. And got it. I'm now halfway through the list of steps. I hope there's not too many more roadblocks in there. And then spent the rest of the week trailing rabbits down long trails, mostly having to do with security. I got an email from GitHub. They are deprecating passwords as of August. So those who deal with GitHub probably should take note. That's it.
Yes. I've been fooling with that as well. So,
Well,
yes.
When you say deprecating passwords, what do you mean by that?
I mean, you can no longer use a password to push to a GitHub repository. You have to use SSH keys. No.
And if you're just a user of other people's code, you can still use the SSH procedure.
Okay, thank you.
For the time being.
Yeah, that's August, and they hinted that there may be other changes forthcoming. Yes. I don't know if you know that they had a rather severe security problem on GitHub recently.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, is there anybody I missed? Well, given that, we're open for general discussion.
I've got a question for Scotty concerning the Neo MAT-Q GPS module. What is the availability of those?
How about if I unmute? That's the middle grade one?
Yes.
You know, I'm not really sure. John picked these. So
I'm looking at DigiKey right now and there's zero available.
Okay, did you try looking on the uBlock site to see if they have any that you could order direct?
No, I did not.
That might be a solution. And what about the Zed one? Is that available on DigiKey? I haven't looked.
That I have not looked at.
Okay, because we're going to initially be building the high performance one.
Okay.
So I'm not sure whether we should end up building some of the low performance or the mid performance ones or not. But the high performance ones are going to be the personal space weather station ones. So I think we're going to focus on that one first. And then, but that's not the one you need. You need the mid grade one, right?
Correct.
Well, you know, if you need just some of those to put in your systems, when we do the run, we could make some for you.
Okay.
If you're planning to use our module, if you're going to put it down on your board, then it doesn't matter.
Well, that's sort of what I'm trying to determine, because if it's just this and one other part, it might make sense for me just to pop it down on the board and be done with it.
Yeah.
So that's why I want to talk to John Ackerman about this, because I'm not quite sure what I'm getting into by doing that.
And the other thing is if we end up having to order from uBlocks also, because the Zed part is not available through DigiKey or not enough of them are, then we can definitely order some for you also. We can just put one order in.
Okay.
Maybe get you some parts faster rather than put in two orders.
Yeah. So we'll leave it as a to be determined.
Yeah, I know we have to do. I have to talk to John too about that, because the Raycon oscillator, the contact he had for that has been stonewalling me. So I have to actually order some parts now. And there's things like minimum order quantities and things that we have to get around for the prototype build. And so I need help from this guy. And if he doesn't want to answer me, I got to find another person.
Right.
This guy's supposed to be a sales guy. So he would be the right guy to talk to, I think. But he's not answering me. So maybe I'm hoping John has another deeper inside the company contact that he can help us out with.
Then they're done that. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I just know there's going to be some long lead time items on this bomb because of all that's going on. So
yeah,
we just decided we better get on it and we're not likely to buy things we don't need. We're more likely to miss some things that we do need, but that's easier to fix than not buying a part that's a long lead time part.
Exactly.
Ironically enough, the FPGAs are probably going to be one of the longest lead time parts, even though they're supposedly we got an inside track to them.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that we're ordering the fastest industrial highest temperature range, the flagship part, if you will, is the most pins, the highest temperature range, the biggest part, everything is big, fast. And so it's not the normal commodity version. So therefore, and since I'm sure that in order to get the speed grade and the temperature range, they do testing to get there. That probably means that they don't really produce that many of them compared to commercial.
They're all produced the same, and that's the primo.
Yeah.
I have a question related to that. Are we getting tied up in some way in this global shortage of chips that's going on right now, or is that a whole different issue than what you're dealing with, Scotty?
That's what I'm worried about. The global shortage supposedly is affecting the automotive industry more than us, but I can tell you this is I'm working on another project and I needed to order some resistors to do some modifications to the circuit. And I looked the resistors up on DigiKey. They had 500 or 600 of them. I need 10 of them. I went to order them an hour later and they were gone. So I had to pick it. It's not a big deal. It's just a 500 ohm resistor, but it's just the idea that, you know, the stock could just be gone and you're out of luck. You have to pick a different part.
They say that companies are hoarding. They're putting together big safety stocks right now, in order to be able to continue producing if they get caught in one of these sanctions things?
Yeah, this toilet paper, huh?
Yeah, this is today's toilet paper.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Just to give you some idea.
This does not sound like fun.
Yeah, just to give you some idea of how badly this is affecting the auto industry, all of the auto companies are having to shut down assembly plants because of they don't have the parts. So it's not just the assembly plants that's shutting down. Because of the supply chain, that shutdown is rippling throughout the global supply chain. So that's costing the auto industry global automotive industry, tens of millions of dollars a day in lost income.
Yeah. Globally. When your line shut down, you got big trouble.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's not just you've got 500 guys, 500 people at a vehicle assembly plant. You've got all the suppliers there at their assembly plants, too. So it's not a local problem. It's a global problem. It's bad.
The good news is we're small potatoes compared to that. The bad news is the ripple effects are when all the toilet paper is gone, then even the guy who wants one roll is out of luck. So eventually it ripples down to us, and then there are no capacitors.
And that's probably what's happening to our audio components as well, because those are used in automotive.
Yeah.
Referring to the part that we'd like to use for the VLF board, it's just there are no parts in this hemisphere, but I'm seeing stock being advertised in China. And if we can find it, I've put at least one request for quote out to see if they're real. But question is, how many do we need to be able to develop with it?
You sure they aren't?
A lot of phony price out there.
Yeah, what's that? Are you sure they're not phony parts? You know,
We don't know. We don't know. Yeah. But actually, given that these particular parts are TI's newest, I doubt that they'd have had time to clone it. Let's put it that way.
Remember a story of the guy who designed in a part, and they went to build the thing, and they got a whole bunch of parts in stock. They ordered them, and they got them in from China. They were building gas pump controllers. Mm-hmm. And the parts were actually empty packages that had no dies in them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sold as working parts because they were hard to get. So, of course, you buy them where you can get them, right? Well, you didn't get them.
Buy them through a broker. You can't return them, and they're laser etched on the top for the part number for what you want to see. And once you get them in the door, you can't return them, and you're all fucking, you're screwed.
That's what we're going to have to deal with on this one. I am looking into, as I mentioned in my earlier email, I am looking into some of the older parts that might at least be able to work for the short term.
What about like the one or two channel parts? Could we maybe build a board with one of those and just as a prototype?
Well, now, that's an interesting thing, is that TI has a two-channel part of the one that we want, but it's on it's a prototype. I mean, it's preliminary. They're not actually on the market yet, but we might be able to get some samples from TI.
I was going to say, if you can just find them, I mean, we only need about 25 parts.
Yeah, so. But there is a two-channel version of that. Looking to use a four channel part, has the same functionality, just two channels. So maybe they might have some.
Yeah.
But I had meant to buy a couple from DigiKey, and then when I went to hit the button, they were gone.
Yeah. Hey, I did a search on one of the clearinghouses, and what came up was a list of development boards that had the part on it. So if you're desperate, you could go buy the development board at $200 a whack and unsolder the part and use it.
Yeah, this is a $15 part in singles.
Yeah, I don't think we're that desperate.
No.
Not yet.
But I remember the DRAM days where people were buying boards and unsoldering the parts and putting them on boards.
That was a classic Camvention trick.
Yeah. So hopefully we won't have to go that route, but I'm worried about getting stuck.
There are a couple of older parts, not quite the same performance, but good enough. And the interesting thing is that their specifications for the digital filter do not mention any changes that happen at the higher sample rates. They're only specified for 48 kilohertz. So I need to get in touch with these guys and see, do they just directly scale? in which case they'd be fine, or are they just not specifying have there?
If the goal is to use the four channel parts, and then if the one or two channel parts don't really emulate those, then what are we doing bothering? I mean,
there's one TI part, and then there's an analog devices part, which is actually one that I used to support, that are four channel, reasonable performance. But the question is, what does the digital filter do at the sample rates we're wanting to run?
Yeah.
So I'm going to follow up on that.
Okay.
But if we can find some of the real parts wherever,
that would
be the best thing. And the question is, how many do we need to prototype and then wait for the supply chain to
I would just suggest 25. And if the prices of these parts go for, this is around $100. Right. So, I mean,
they're about a $15 part, but one place, and I sent a request for quote to one place that says in quantity tens, they go down to $5, which little suspicious.
Yeah. But even a few hundred dollars, you know, in the scheme of things, if we can get them.
If we could get some and they work.
All of the discrete parts we'll be able to substitute for, but obviously not that.
Because this part's a great part if we can get it.
Yeah.
Okay, Scotty, I'm looking at the U-Blox website, and they have the Neo and the Leia M8T series.
Okay.
And the Leia part, Leia-M8T, they're $73.85 a piece in the minimum quantity of 50.
But is that the same pinout and package type as the Neo?
It looks like it is. The U-Blox M8 is... contact us.
No, they're much different in footprint.
Okay.
And they're, in fact, one's a lot bigger than the other.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a functional difference.
So I'm not sure I can buy the lower quantity that I'm looking for.
How many are you looking to buy?
I was thinking about three or five just to get started, but
how many?
Three or five.
Okay. Well, three or five, you're talking about three parts? I thought you were talking about 300.
No, just three to get to work with.
Yeah. Have you tried, hold on a second. Let me see if what I can find.
I tried Mouser. They don't even have them.
You have the full part number by any chance, Andy?
It's let's see.
NEO M8T. Is that the FW3?
Yes, NEO-MAT-O.
Dash O or zero?
Zero. Yeah, NEO-MAT-Tango-Oscar. I'm sorry, zero.
Okay.
Somebody's breathing into their mic. Thank you.
Yeah, there's Mouser has 250 on order, but it doesn't say when they're coming in.
Okay, I couldn't even find it.
Let's see. DigiKey has 250 on order also at $51 a piece.
Oh, now it's
Mouser, that's interesting that Mouser wants $89 a piece. Oh, that's in onesies. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the DigiKey price is in 250s. So that's a lot less. So it's interesting. Mouser's 250 piece price, DigiKey's 250 piece price is Mouser's 100 piece price.
Yeah, I see that.
Now, is the difference of the Neo and the Leia just the pinout, the package?
I
don't see any
don't
spec
know.
Difference.
Dave Whitten, was
a Dave Whitten would know that.
Yeah.
Enlighten us, Dave.
Well, I don't really know that for sure, but I do know that the Leia is the package that the Leia is the one that was most common. In the sixes and the sevens, the 60s and the Neo was a smaller form factor. I believe.
Right.
And the Leias have kind of disappeared. I don't think that the eights and the nines have used that anymore, as far as I know.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right, Dave. They have the same data sheet, but the LEA part is about almost double the size.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the thing to do is put them on back order.
Yeah, let's see.
There's one spec difference I'm finding. What's it? Note 15.
Yeah, contact us is not a good sign.
Just note 15. Oh.
Oh, well.
Antenna bias is supplied by...
Problem LA for another day. 19.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad. I hate these kind of shortages because as soon as they start, then people panic.
Yep.
They start hoarding buying, and then pretty soon you have nothing.
Right. What I used to experience at Keithley is they would buy this stuff. It would sit on a shelf for 6 months. And since the turn ratio number on it was low, they would end up scrapping it.
So they bought it on speculation.
They'd pay like 3 times the price. And then 6 months later, it was in the scrap bin. It's like, yeah. Are you nuts?
Yeah.
I can tell you, well, this may date how old I am, but I remember walking through Motorola when I worked there. And this supplier that we used to work with, on her cube, she had a picture of Sylvester Stallone with the headband. And it said, D-Rambo. And he was going to, you know, go and get stock for you because.
One problem with all this is that it propagates up the node, the chains of nodes too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they slow moving things from one node to the next smaller one, or they use older processes and you end up with a lot of stuff that, or else people just stockpile the parts that aren't at the bleeding edge nodes for fabrication. They end up backed up in the chain, and that often takes longer to shake out. That's why some dumb parts, you know, disappear. Because you're old, if you've got an 8051 in there somewhere, you know, it may well be at an 85 nanometer node, but it's they're too busy using that space for something else. And
I did find a difference between the Neo and the Leah, and it has to do with the front end, the RF front end. Mm. Leah is suitable for use with active antennas. The Neo has an onboard LNA to use with passive antennas.
Okay.
But otherwise, they look like Neo the same.
You said the Neo is used with passive antennas?
Neo can be used with a passive or active antenna.
Because we're using it with an active antenna. So.
Right. We can, but the point being, yeah, Leah could be used. If we're using an active antenna, we could use the Leah, but as you've pointed out, it's the bigger package.
Right.
I would think...
Okay, I'll just go back to my CAD guy and tell him that he has to relay the board out with the bigger package.
Right.
You're a brave man.
You want to challenge him.
But he doesn't get to make the board any bigger.
You are a brave man.
Somebody is breathing on their microphone again.
Yeah, please, that's... Please Dave, could you move your microphone?
So... We need the TARDIS model of PC board that has, you know, 10 square inches inside and 5 square inches outside.
Or they place parts on the edge of the board.
Yeah, you know, we had a system architect that we accused him of that, of wanting to place parts on the edges, because he kept asking for these features, and we were a VME size. We had a fixed area, and he kept asking for new stuff, new features. And we're like, wait a minute, we can't fit the stuff you want already on the board. And we have, on VME, we have specific height limitations too. So you can't put stuff on the back other than like bypass caps and things.
Yep, 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done that, ended up with a 3-board stack.
Yeah, we ended up with a 6-board stack at a Motorola because they wanted these huge amount of memory. And the problem was not so much even the memory wouldn't fit on the board, because that was obvious it wouldn't, but the power consumption was exceeded the amount of power that the VME DIN connectors could provide on the boards that plugged in. So what we did is we put DIN connectors in the middle of the board so that we took the six boards and we plugged them together. So we have an IO board, 4 memory cards, and a CPU board, and the CPU board and the I/O card did not draw as much power as the memory. So we fed power from the edge connectors up through the DIN connectors, and we made the system work. And it was great. The CPU card used a mezzanine card that had 4 processors and 8 MMUs on it. So it was really even more than a 6-board stack when you plug it all together. But you can, when we first got the boards and we plugged the 6 boards together and we tried to plug it into a VME backplane for the first time, you had to have a hammer. Because you have 6 boards you're trying to push in and you can't do it. You have to turn the chassis on its back and you have to stand on it because you can't hit it. You can't use an impact. You have to use a force, or you have to have a big, like a pipe clamp or something, you know, that you can, has depth that you can squeeze it. And it was not good.
That was not pretty.
But that was the, if you ever heard of it, was the RISC system that Motorola made back in probably about 1990.
I remember that.
1988, the 88-100
mm-hmm.
CPU, and the 88-200 was the MMU. Well, yep. Me and Charlie, my business partner, we were the ones that designed those boards. So, and it was great because, of course, being Motorola, we were part of Motorola then. Motorola always gets the worst service from its own divisions, right? So we're the big consumer of the microprocessor division in Austin. And when we have a problem and we have something that doesn't work right, we just got stonewalled because they didn't want to hear it from us. And so the joke was we'd put in an errata complaint and they'd say that it wasn't true. That this is not a problem. We can't duplicate this problem. Then the next revision, they'd have the solution and that errata would be listed as solved. So, but they didn't want to talk to us, so made things difficult.
Anything else for the meeting tonight, or are we ready to wrap up here?
Other than where we can find more parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad about the parts. I didn't really.
You haven't heard the last of this. This is
no. We're that's why we're going as fast as we can to combine the 3 bombs and just flat out order the parts. We're not going to wait around for checking or anything. Yeah, okay, we might get a few, extra capacitors or something, but we're not going to order extra ICs, FPGAs. I mean, we know how many we need of those.
Yeah. So
we want to get the orders on the books and get them as fast as we can.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah, I just hope we aren't too late.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're right on that cusp.
Yeah.
But again, we're small potatoes compared to most of these guys. Even building 25 or 30 boards, we're small.
Right, right, definitely.
If you're doing 10,000 pieces a month, they don't care.
Yeah, yeah. But it's interesting because Altera will actually work with you. And we have, because the big users of the chips schedule the deliveries. And we've actually had the distributors peel off a few, like 10, 20, 30 parts for us, knowing that they'll have those parts come in later for the demands of the big guy that needs them, like in September or October. But I don't know, it just depends on if you get to talk to the right person, whether they'll do that or not.
You have to have a good rapport with the sales rep. Yeah, that makes a big difference.
One of the things that can amplify our influence is that we are prototyping for potentially much larger number later. Mm-hmm. So that, they'll see us as encouraging people to use their parts. The other part of it is, of course, that we're working with education, and they like to see us interface with education because we're teaching people how to use their parts who will presumably use them later down
the road. Part of that is you've got to use the reps for that because the distributors don't really give a whit about that. They don't.
But the as you say, the reps can go to bat for us, and I've been able to make use of that in the past.
And that's one of the things that helps us because we've been doing this for a few days and we have good relationships with the reps. So when we say we need this many, they know we're not hoarding. They know that we need this many, and if we can get 25 or 50 or 100, then we'll be satisfied. So,
right.
So we'll probably know a lot more next week about what we're short and what we can get. So that is all.
Yeah.
Scotty, I just, if I could ask one question.
Sure.
You know, it's been my, you know, findings that sometimes from pushing from the bottom is good, but maybe a little nudge from the top. You know, is there any way to contact the vice president of the firm, you know, and say, look, you know, we're an organization working with some of the smartest academics in multi-university and that, and just sort of grease the skids. It certainly has worked from time to time in my business career. I mean, is that a possibility, or can we do something like that?
That sometimes works with the smaller companies. But with like Intel, that's not going to work unless you got, you know, your brother-in-law is a VP, or, you know, your fraternity brother is, you know, I mean, that kind of thing works. But it definitely works if you can get access to the guy. And I got a quick story about that, is that we designed a connector in from Sullins Corporation. Now, Sullins is not a little bitty outfit. So, and I don't know anybody at Sullins, right? But I just designed this connector in, and they had a policy that you could only get three samples. That was it. You were allowed three samples per order or whatever, per design. Well, the customer wanted us to build five prototypes. And so I requested five samples because the minimum order was 250 pieces. So now I'm going to have to buy 250 pieces to build five boards, or I'm going to play, you know, please, sir, can I have five? And the girl taking the order was just following the company policy. And she said, absolutely not. Three's it. Here's your three. And so we thought we were clever. We went back in and we ordered three more samples of the exact same connector, but with different plating on it. Okay. So we had like a 15 microinch plating and a 30 microinch plating. And they're interchangeable to us for our prototypes. But she comes back and she says, well, that's the same part. You can't do that. So basically she says, you know, get lost. Well, I just happened to be reading a trade magazine that week, and here is the Sullins guy, the VP of sales or something, making a speech to the, you know, Comdex or something. And so, and it had his email address in the article. So I wrote to the VP, and my title of my company is president. Okay. So I'm not just some Joe Blow, you know, low-level guy. I mean, even though I consider myself a low-level guy, my title is high enough. So I write to this VP guy, and I say, you know, look, we're trying to design this connector in. We can't really, I really don't want to design your company's connector out, but you're being unreasonable here, and I can only get three samples. I got a phone call within a half hour of the email saying, thank you, sir, for your email. How many did you like? We'll send you as many as you want. And it was just taken care of. But I just happened to get hold of the right guy. And, you know, sometimes that works. And if I could get hold of the name of the right guy, that works great. So if I get stuck, maybe I'll ask all of you guys to come up with a name of somebody, you know, who works there. And if we can, I'm willing to try it. I have no problem.
Well, I mean, Scotty, that's a huge success story. And you know, never say never. It's funny how a small world, you know, I'm often reminded, well, I'm reminded here this week, Jordan's been in the news, you know, in the Middle East. And, you know, by a quirk of fate, I happened to meet Her Majesty Queen Rihanna here a number of years ago, a few years ago, I guess. And so it's a funny how one contact leads to another contact. So, you know, I mean, maybe we can just put our thinking caps on and just, you know, think out of the box. Maybe there's an alternate way, or that, not that you're doing poor work here, you're doing fabulous work, but, you know, if parts are a crisis, you know, let's consider something else possibly.
And for some of the parts that our local reps take care of, like for Altera and Intel, this guy that I deal with, I've known him for about 30 years, and I call him he's the Rambo. Okay. When I get stuck and I need parts, I call Alan up and Alan takes care of it. Like, and as an example, we were building, ticker tape signage. And, you know, as you know, you probably know LEDs come in brightness and color hue bins. And we needed 250,000 of the same bin, and they don't like to do that. because they don't, you know, when they give you the price for huge number, they say random bins, we get to pick. So then they pick whichever ones they have lots of. And I go back and I told them, I don't care what bin you pick, but I want them the same, because they otherwise it won't be uniform in our sign. And they were giving us the runaround. So I called Alan up and I said, help, I need these. And Alan, he got us the name of the guy in China that has this factory stock of it. And we got our 250K LEDs. And the thing is, it was really desperate because we had wasted a couple of weeks on these guys trying to get them to sell us the one bin. And so now we only have like 5 weeks left before we have to have the parts to be assembled. So it was like, nobody will deliver that many parts in 5 weeks. Well, Alan found somebody who would, and we got the parts that it was scratched that off the list. It was not on the list of a high pole in the tent anymore. So, but that works great for the parts that he reps. But if you got a part that is not repped by anyone who's factory rep only, or a rep that you haven't worked with very closely, but ones that we have worked closely with, sometimes we can shake loose, you know, a few hundred parts, just enough to build our protos, just because the reps have a lot of clout. So they can say, hey, look, this is a critical customer. We need a reel of parts for them. You know, sometimes that works too.
Well, Scotty, I mean, the information I'm getting here is we've got the right team and certainly the right man on the job on that with all these success stories. So, so I've got a lot of confidence in you that I'm gaining here through this conversation that you've done this once or twice and been successful. So never say never. I mean, nothing's a perfect thing in life, but
when there's no parts, there's no parts. So if there aren't any, then it doesn't matter if you're President Lincoln, you know, you don't get them.
No, I hear you on that. And just take my, you know, comments. I'm a newcomer to the group with a grain of salt. I'm just, you know, adding in some alternate ideas.
Well, you know, I'm perfectly happy to share the success and the roadblocks here, and you know, apply anything that anybody has here to offer in solving the problems. And you never know. You just have, like you said, you just have to ask, because you never know who knows who. And like the Sullen story, just knowing the right person. And like it, and unfortunately, we can't use any Crystek oscillator parts because they don't make what we need. But like, I think he's the owner, part owner of Crystek. I talked to him on the phone. And so you take a detour right to the top. And in fact, he offered on the HPSDR project, Dave, you might remember this.
Yes.
Is that he offered to actually build us oscillators with better phase noise than the ones that we were using. Of course, they would cost more, but if we wanted to pay for better phase noise, he would actually build us a run and make a run for us, which was amazing to me that you can get. I mean, it's almost like a custom part.
Mm-hmm. I had a relationship with Statek like that at one time, also a crystal manufacturer. Yeah.
So they have some relationships still with people that could help us out if we get stuck. So I'm hoping that we don't, but cross your fingers.
Indeed.
So have you heard about what is going to be the solution to this? I mean, is it because some lines have shut down? Is it because demand is up? Why are we having this shortage?
Well, I know that there have been a couple of fabs go down, at least one for fire, I think two, which doesn't help.
So that probably wouldn't affect capacitors and resistors more than as much as it affects.
Right.
The chips.
But that would be the ICs.
Yeah.
I know Biden's looking to bring manufacturing back to the United States, but that'll take a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Rachel used to work for a company and she used to help make chips, but she's moved on now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I know someone who works for Global Foundries in upstate New York.
I keep telling Rachel to go like look on the local buy sell trade groups on Facebook and see if they have like extra sputtering machines or MOVCD machines or things like that. We could just, you know,
you've got a bunch of acreage. You could put up a fab at your place.
That's what I was saying. I mean,
Rachel was the lead engineer.
Rachel was a metals engineer. She could, you know, she worked in the clean room doing that stuff. She could do it.
But she also knows that that you're not going to be setting that up in a week also.
Yeah.
No, we had a guy that wanted to set up a fab line, an assembly line, sorry, in the back room of our building that we used to have. We were only 8,000 square feet, and the area that he had was not even half of it. And we're just looking at the size of the machine. He actually bought a reflow machine, and he had it shipped to our warehouse. And I'm looking at the machine, and I'm going like, there's not enough room in here to set this up, because you have to be able to walk around it, right? I mean, to get access to it. And then besides that, it's just a reflow machine. What's going to place the parts? You got to have a pick and place or something. I mean, you can do a limited amount with hand placement, but that gets pretty tedious pretty fast. So anyway, needless to say, he ended up just reselling the machine. I think he actually made out on it. He made a profit on it, but he bought it, believe this or not, he bought it on eBay. He bought a reflow machine on eBay. Anyway, those are some of the things that didn't succeed.
You can build a reflow machine out of a toaster oven.
Yeah, you can build one that charges your boards up good.
We actually have one at Dartmouth that's not too far beyond that, but it works.
Once you figure out that it's the air temperature that you need to set and not the and you block the radiant heat from the board.
Yeah, actually what we had to do is put a thermocouple on the board itself to get the temperature profile.
So was it really a hot air heat or was it radiant heat?
That I'm not sure of.
Because we had a guy come back on the HPSDR program, and you remember this, Dave. He bought a mercury board, a blank one, and he sent us an email back, and the board was just charcoal. I mean, it was like all deformed and black and bubbly. And we took the photo into our CM who made our boards, and we asked him, okay, now, because he's accusing us of using inferior FR4 because, well, look, it charred. My toaster was only set at 220. And, you know, and 20 degrees hotter than the melting temperature of the solder. So the our CM sent the photos back to the board manufacturer, and the board manufacturer comes back and he says, in order to do that kind of damage to the FR4, you need 350 degrees C. So basically, your toaster oven's defective, okay, because you're way overheating the board. So we sent him a new board, and we didn't hear anything back from him. So maybe he fixed his toaster oven. Maybe he decided to hand solder. I don't know, but it was certainly not. Because the problem is that if you don't block the radiant heat from the elements, the radiant heat heats the board up, and then the hot air that you're blowing around inside is nothing compared to that radiant heat, and you overheat the board and burn it up. And of course, the guy who did that, he sent back samples of other blank PC boards that he had run through his toaster oven and did not get damaged. So it was trying to indicate that, well, your FR4 is bad and these other ones are okay. But, you know, these are boards that came from who knows where. So you don't know what they're really made out of. Anyway, just a fun story. I bet I have that picture somewhere. I need to blow that up and hang it on my wall as a reminder.
Well, there also is there's some restructuring going on Semiconductor. The Mountaintop plant for one, where I used to work, there were like 10 or 11 layoffs. Everybody in the FA lab, couple people in my group, and my manager's boss, but he was in a different site. But the new CEO wanted to do restructuring and get rid of old lines, older legacy products that don't really make a lot of money. And I know that that's going on, and the site where I work may eventually close down. So I don't know if that's a common thing that's going on in the semiconductor industry right now. But I know there's a lot of problems.
I've heard of that happening in the past. What happens is outside companies usually step up and they take the crumbs that Motorola leaves behind, which are big shakes to them. Motorola says, oh, well, you know, only $20 million worth of business, that's not worth our time, so we're going to dump that line. And another company comes along and says, $20 million? Oh, we'll take that. And then they take the line and they continue making the parts. And in fact, the people that we bought our building from was called Lansdale. They actually specialize in buying dies from companies and continuing on manufacturing the obsolete ICs. And their slogan was, yesterday's technology today. Believe it or not. And they sold PTL and they sold stuff that nobody else could.
I mean, yep. In a way, that's what Rachel was doing. She was working for SRI, which used to be Sarnoff, and they were tasked with like recreating chips for, you know, fighter planes that those ships aren't made anymore. So they'd have to go back, reverse engineer the old chips, and then recreate this old technology.
And was that SRI, was that Stanford Research Institute or something different?
Yeah, it's Stanford Research Institute. But I mean, which does, it doesn't stand for Stanford Research Institute anymore. It used to stand for that.
Oh, okay.
SRI just stands for SRI, but it came from Stanford Research
Institute. Well, been through that. We actually saved a number of the SSM parts from Solid State Micro. The Analog Devices bought SSM some time ago, and it was being supported out of the Santa Clara office. And the product line manager, who was, I didn't come up with the term, but Osama bin Sokolov was how he was referred to, was just cutting lines that he saw as unprofitable. But we got into big trouble with the pro audio industry, cutting some parts that were just fundamental. So my group actually ended up taking over the product line and saving a number of the parts.
Just raise the price?
We didn't raise the price. We just left them what they were.
But I mean, if they're not profitable, you raise the price, right?
Well, he wasn't going to do that. He just was going to unceremoniously drop them. And in fact, we had a 2-year policy on obsoleting components. He didn't even follow that. He just dropped them hard. The whole industry was like screaming at us.
You do that very many times and pretty soon you don't have any customers anymore.
That's right. So I was working out of Wilmington. We were a digital audio group and we took over the parts and saved the industry in some ways. But we've been through that.
But like the story of the NE602, 612, have you heard that story? The mixer chip that Signetics had.
Oh, right.
And that they were actually going to obsolete those, and they put the dies away in a storage area, and the storage area burned down, and the dies were destroyed. But the part was so popular, there's so much demand, that, and I don't remember who did it, but they went back and they recreated the same design again, and they built new dies. I believe that's where the NE612 came from versus the 602.
Ah.
And now you can still buy them, and they're 30 cents a piece.
Now you can get both of them, but yeah. Well, one of them, what it was, the SSM 2017, which is a very good mic preamp, basically. It's an instrumentation amp, very low noise. I think part of it was that the fab was being shut down, but the chief designer had come up with a replacement part on the new fab, and they just wouldn't support it. So we ended up taking it over, and the SSM 2019 is still available.
This is on the old fab?
The 2019 is on a newer fab, so it's still supportable, and you can still buy it.
But is it like a drop-in replacement for the
old one? Yes, it's nearly the same performance on the newer fab, and it just needed those of us who cared about the pro audio industry to support it. And I left there 15 years ago now, but it's I just bought some more of the 2019s, and it's still available.
Well, you can buy brand new 12AX7s, right?
Well, yes. You can get 6L6 GCs.
Yeah. Yes. But try finding, 6BZ6s. Sooner or later, we're going to run out of NOS ones, and then then your Drake R4 won't be worth anything.
Yep. Well, I've got a classic, the Dynaco Stereo 70 that has the 71 the 7199s in it. And apparently those are on Obtainium now. So there's a redesigned board you can pop into those amps. Uses 6 DG8s.
All right.
Well, I got to drop off, but let's hope that we're not dealing with unobtainium here.
Bob, Bill showed up at home.
Yeah, I've been here just copying the mail. I carried the video call in with me from the car, and it's amazing. It didn't drop it. It smoothly transferred from 5G to LTE to my wireless system, just without a glitch.
Amazing.
Anyway, good night. 73.
All right, 73.
73.
Good 73, discussion. All. Take care. Stay safe.
Thanks, everybody.
You too.
73. Good night.
Good night.